It's Wednesday, July 2nd, 2014, and you're listening to episode 344 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 31 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Beth.
This is Brodor.
And this is Wayne.
So first off, I want to give a shout out to TsunamiCon. It's a convention coming up on November 7th through 9th in Wichita, Kansas. This is their first year they're attempting it. And I want to give a shout out to these guys because they said that Fear the Con sort of inspired them to give this a try. So
awesome.
All the way in September, isn't it? Too Tsunami November. To mention it?
No, see, I was going to go the route of, is it really appropriate to name your convention after a national disaster that kills lots of people? But you went further than me.
My whole thought was, why are you naming it after a tsunami when you're in Kansas and there's no ocean?
I'm not going to respond to any of these points.
I'd still go, though.
Oh, hell yeah, I'd go. It sounds like a fun time.
It does.
They're also having a bunch of game days. You can hit them up for the links and all that stuff. I may put some of it in the show notes. I know I got one come up here in the summer, but those are free game days. But they're trying for an actual convention here.
And remember, it's apparently never too tsunami to go out and register.
Oh, Wayne. Wayne. Wow.
You're welcome.
Hopefully the con's finances are in order so they don't end up underwater on this. But yeah.
I mean, they're going to get a flood of support after people listen.
Well, and also the tides are going to kind of pull back because this is in November, which is outside of the main con season.
You hurt me. The two of you hurt me.
So,
come on, it's water under the bridge, right?
I need a bridge to get over this.
Fukushima. So after the last episode, I got a question for you guys, because Beth, you were talking about something that you did to handle, I guess I should say not handle, I don't know, how you responded to the situation. Has anyone here mic dropped on a game, either as a player or GM? And if so, why? And by mic dropped, I'm not talking about you let it die or whatever. I mean, you, in the middle of the session, drop the hammer, walk out the door.
Yes. I've only done it once.
To the best of my recollection, I have never done it. That I cannot recall a single time I've ever mic dropped a game, ever. I take that back. There was one time at a convention. This was a con game. Guy was trying really hard. This was not a Fear the Con. And the game was just so ridiculously boring that I had to get up and leave. But we actually had somewhere to be anyway. But within my regular gaming, there have been times where, for one reason or another, I've had to let the campaign die. You know, maybe poor attendance, I wasn't feeling it, whatever the issue was. But I can never remember in the middle of a session as a GM or a player just being like, done, out, mic drop.
I try really hard not to do that. Just because if people are willing to get together and run a game for me or be in a game for me, then I want to do everything that I can to be present and be there, because people are giving up their time and their talent to do something with me. I really feel bad about the fact that I did mic drop that one time, and I really hope that it doesn't happen again. But
I say I never have. I've seen some awkward things happen, and I just sit there quietly while it's going on. But I've never mic dropped.
All right, Brodor, I'm guessing you've got a book.
So, like I said, if you listened to the previous episode, you heard my comments about me being a bitch, and I like to take my ball and go home. But two distinct times that I recall doing this, and I'm sure I've done it a number of times before that. When I was running one of my paid games, the situation just got so out of hand with this particular group of players that I said, look, even for your money, this is not worth it. This is the last session. I'm firing you guys. I quit. I'm not doing this job anymore. Now that we played out. So I guess that's not
technically.
So yeah,
you finished the session. You didn't walk.
All right. So I was running a Mutants and Masterminds game. It was coming off the heels of an almost 3-year 3.0 Forgotten Realms game. And we played for a long, long time. And the magic just wasn't happening. And sort of counterpoint to what Beth was saying is that as the game master, I put in a tremendous amount of work and effort, and nobody else in the party wants to step up and run a game. They're like, we want you to run the game.
Okay.
And it just wasn't panning out. And the players just had no appreciation at that moment for the effort that I had put forth in trying to put all this together. And so I just closed my book. I said, look, we're done. And they're like, what? I'm like, we can go have some beers. We can go play some video games. We can hang out. But whatever we're doing, we're not fucking doing this. And that was that. We never played that game again.
The closest I've ever come is video games. If I've been on a MMO and I'm in a random group, I've gone down and disabled my network card before just to make to simulate a drop of connection. One time I did that, I forgot that my wife was on the team with me.
Oh,
and
whoops.
They're like, aren't you in the same house with him? Because we had been talking in chat for a while and the people knew that we were married.
Wow, that's fantastic. That's absolutely fantastic.
Video games, yes. That's even funny. With pickup groups, I typically try to see it out. There's been a handful that were so bad that I just shut down the computer. I didn't even bother the network. I just shut down the computer.
I think it's hilarious this, that but... you have to come up with the reason to leave. Oh, I'm going to why don't you just go, you know, guys, this isn't working.
Well, sometimes why do you even say that at all? I mean, you can just slash group quit. And you're absolutely right, because Chad is a lot more ballsy about this. I mean, if he's in a pickup group in whatever MMO and they're being a bunch of jackasses, I don't know if he even says anything. I mean, he might say bye, but then he just group quits out. And you know what? You're never going to see these people again, especially now that a lot of MMOs are doing cross-server grouping and such.
Well, sometimes there's somebody on the group that you do know and you don't want to
screw them.
Yeah. You're screwing them by leaving.
Yeah.
But you don't want to
let them know you're screwing them.
Exactly. At that point,
it's
you're
like,
just
I can read
dropping.
Your mind.
And then obviously you had a connection problem because your character's just standing there not moving until it times out.
Unless your wife is in the group.
Your wife is also
in the
internet connection.
Oh, my wife was in the group and she was completely, I mean, she was one of the people that I was like, look, I'm not playing this game anymore.
Yeah.
I'm walking away from this.
I don't think anyone has ever made me so mad or so hurt, whatever negative emotion, that I couldn't at least finish the current session. I've certainly let plenty of games die, and not every time I let a game die is it because I'm mad at anybody. Sometimes there really are just scheduling conflicts. I'm not pissed off, but the game just ain't coming together, whatever. But even the times that I've been hurt or offended, I've always at least seen that session through and then just not come
back.
Yeah,
every time I've seen someone leave the table mad, it's always been after the session's over.
Right.
Once the session's over and then people talk about what just happened in the session, then I've seen things happen. But never seen anyone walk out on a session.
In fairness, my mic drop was at the very end of the session. So maybe I could just, it's more accurate to say I ended it early.
Well, of course it ended the session. You're the GM. When you mic drop, the session's over.
I've never seen someone leave a game session angry. But oh, then
I
again,
have. I have too.
I have, yeah.
But where I game, there aren't mirrors. So every time I storm out of the room, I don't actually get to witness
wow.
it.
Nice. You're that guy.
Well, okay. So, I mean, I guess I sort of am that guy. I'm angry and passionate, and I care about my hobby, and I want to do it, and I don't want other people to f*** it up.
So quit f***ing it up, people.
Quit f***ing up my games, right?
You know, I'm not sure if I respect that or I'm objectively horrified by it.
Well, so, okay.
Because, see, if we start off with, you are the first person, I think, in my entire gaming career, I have heard say the phrase, I am that guy. That's the problem with that guy at every damn group is, of course, he's not that guy.
Oh.
He's just playing the Dex Rogue Ninja Cut Purse again.
Right. So that's not my thing. I will be completely diverse in character and I won't get into gaming history and gaming stories. But that's my issue. Like, I show up to the game and I want the game to be the game, right? Uh-huh. I treat it like work. I have a very serious work ethic and a very serious gaming ethic. If we're going to get together and we're going to watch videos, fine, let's watch videos. If we're going to get together and dick around on our phones and drink, let's do that. But if we're going to game, we have allotted this period of time, and whoever's running the game, usually me, has put in a tremendous amount of effort to entertain you for the next 4 to 6 hours.
I probably should have pre-warned you that watching videos before, during, and after is part of our podcast.
Uh-oh.
Before I pull you on these half-hour diversions
on
YouTube.
But here's the thing. You're going to pay me to Game Master. Whether you're paying me in Earth dollars, great. But honestly, my preferred currency is attention.
Right.
You're going to pay me your attention. And if you don't have respect for that, well, why am I here?
I pay in baked goods. Is that fine?
Oh, dude, the bread you made for Christmas? unreal. It was so good.
Yay.
So it was so good.
I'm diabetic, so she makes sugar-free cookies for me.
Oh. But I mean, really, I don't know. I mean, I've walked away from groups and just said, look, what you guys do isn't what I do. And I respect what you do, but it's not for me.
Sure.
And that's fair. I mean, everybody has their own taste.
Right. Like, I don't want to go watch a bunch of pornography and drink a bunch of crappy beer and tell stories about work. I want to play a game. Right.
I've had that frustration before. You've set apart this time for gaming. You only have so much time for gaming. And maybe the group hasn't seen each other in 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you haven't been with them for a month. For some reason, everyone has to catch up. That night, typically, you don't get into the serious gaming. Mm-hmm. It has to be a light night. But I have that mindset of, this is gaming time. I want a game. I want a game. I want a game.
See, I'm like that too. And
I'm not playing that video game you're talking about, Dan and Chad. I want a game.
I can do other stuff to a point. Like, now, when I do have a breaking point, or eventually it's like, okay, we've been talking for 30 minutes, 45 minutes. I mean, come on. We've gotten it out of our system. Let's move on.
I used to be a lot worse with that. Our first GM, they lived in Columbia, and we would go up there for the weekends. And I used to get mad at them for stopping to eat. Like, what do you mean you're hungry? Keep going.
Oh, my God. Actually, not stopping to eat. One of my huge pet peeves are people that eat during the game. I'm not talking snacks. Hmm. I'm talking the people that bring like a full meal. And while I'm running the game, they stop to eat a meal. I will not allow it. I will not allow that while I'm... I mean, I'll stop the game. It's like, oh, let me get down. But I can totally game while I'm eating. Hold on a sec. Like, no, you f***ing can't. Yeah.
But you're a skinny person. See, a skinny person would say that. As a fat person, like, I'm totally down with sitting down and eating my pizza and talking about my character.
Yeah.
And maybe washing it down with some beer.
Let me shock you with a bit of reality here. You talk and eat with the same orifice. It would be easier...
Not everyone.
To take a communal dump while gaming. Because at least
not it's in not, my house.
At least
Ew.
It's not using the same part of the body.
That's it. Roman bath con game. Everybody wears a toga. Everybody poops together. We're going to find a bathroom, take down all the stall walls and doors, and we're just going to dump while we game.
No.
Everybody bring your own books because I ain't touching yours.
All of those books are flagged.
Yeah, we'll put a big X in the front of all those.
Are you kidding? We're just going to pass a tablet from stall to stall.
Oh, oh, oh.
Dan, if it's my book, it's been in the bathroom anyway. Because that's where you read. That's what the bathroom is for.
Remind
for pooping
me,
and reading.
Remind me to never touch any book that Wayne has ever had.
Yeah, I don't.
If it's been in the bathroom with you, I don't want it.
There's some things you should know about some books you have at your house.
Oh,
that's gonna have to that you flip through everything.
I am.
Well, hold on. Let's be fair. She won't be offended by the books if you understand that any particular surface they've had sex there.
Okay, that's fair.
That's fair.
In fairness, I did.
I just actually assumed too.
I did clean it first. So
it's Pat. Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of a given. So, all right. Topic for today is realizing you were wrong. Wayne's got a story here, but let me set up the topic in general.
The story is my whole gaming career.
You're playing a game.
But Wayne, you're never wrong.
And you realize partway into the game that you were seriously wrong about a major rule or a major bit of the setting to the point that to correct it would require a lot of retconning or some pretty heavy tactics. And not fixing it potentially creates holes in either the setting or the system. So with that set up, Wayne, what is your specific example of this?
First, in general, I find that when I run a game, the first time I run a system, I always make mistakes on the system. I've typically never played the system before. It's something I'm running for the first time. I haven't played it. I've read through the book, sure, but there's so much in the books, and I'm the type of person that learns by doing. So there are always minor mistakes. Usually that's not a big deal. Usually it won't impact the game overall, and you just come back next time and you get it right. So I was running this Pokemon game, and we've since ended the Pokemon game because I basically came to the group this past weekend and said, guys, I'm not feeling it. Thank you all for letting me try it. I really appreciate it for you giving me the shot, but it's not clicking with me. You know, they all understood that and we're moving on. But when I first started to run it, I had read through this system, and this was a fan-made system that's online, and it is a good 300, 400 pages long.
Oh my gosh.
This is huge. It's D20 based, but it is so in-depth. It covers anything that's ever happened in any Pokemon game or anime ever.
You mean you don't have time to go sit in your bathroom and read 300 to 400 pages?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Have like some oatmeal and
some super colon blow.
Well, no, here's the thing. There were
some Indian two, food.
There were two separate fan-made Pokemon systems that were both of a similar length. I read both of them in 1 week, trying to pick out which one I was going to run.
Oh.
And so I come to gaming, I run the session, I get everything going. I'm realizing combat just isn't working. Something is really, really wrong here, and I can't figure out what it is. And then after it's all said and done, we run the session, I go home. During the week, I'm rereading, and I get to it. It's like,
in the bathroom.
Of course. I get to that section, I'm like, oh, I have forgotten a major part of the system. I have forgotten the piece of the system that makes each individual Pokemon different. This combat was both generic and completely wrong, and there's no defense, and everything about it was totally and completely wrong. We just talked about what this combat was going to be like in the game system, and now I realize I don't know what the combat's like because we did it really wrong. And oops. At that point, I'm like, how do I approach this? Do I just tell everyone, hey, guys, I really screwed that up. And that's the approach I took.
Right.
I just came back and said, because in this case, there was no way I could come back and be, here's how it's going to work this time, without just coming out and saying, I really screwed that up. Everything we did last week and you took the time to learn, forget all of that.
We were okay with that. I think Wayne was more upset about it than we were.
I think the GM certainly has to agree. The train is going to stop and might even switch tracks, because the times that I've hit up against this where I realized I had a rule significantly wrong. The first example I can think of is running BattleTech way back when I first got the game. And it's a dense game. I did not get the movement charts right. And so light mechs, which were fast moving and supposed to be harder to hit, were entirely too easy to hit. And so they became absolutely worthless, which for anyone who's played BattleTech with me knows that's not my opinion. I actually prefer pursuit mechs, which are kind of faster medium mechs, but they behave like light mechs.
Damn, Locust.
And Locust lives through everything.
But when I got that right, by that point, one, I had scarred the group, which was not these, oh, everybody's got a pilot and Atlas type players. But I had scarred them to the point they wouldn't touch a light mech, so I had to reconvince them of that. And then give them the opportunity that, hey, now that these things have their advantage back, you can swap your mech and we'll just pretend like that's what you've always had. When it's happened to me, where I've been playing a game and the game master's been like, hey, this is all wrong, it's kind of like, okay, that's cool, but now do you realize my entire character's broken? And so I want a chance to either rethink what I'm playing completely, or at least take a heavy eraser to the character sheet and put together the character I want to play.
Well, and that's the focus I wanted to take on the episode, because my example, this wasn't so bad. It was a huge thing that was totally wrong and for me ruined the whole first session.
But it was the first session.
There are examples like when I look at Dresden, I was consistently getting wrong the magic for half of a campaign. And then I figured it out. That's more like what you're talking about, Dan, where this has gone on all this time, yeah, and the character has been built around that one thing, and now it's different. And how do and you like, yeah, approach it?
Yeah, because you're basically going to have one of a couple reactions. Magic is a lot more powerful than we thought it was. That might upset one part of the group. Magic isn't what we thought it was, either qualitatively or quantitatively, and that's going to upset.
Or the skills you selected because they fed your magic were the wrong skills.
Okay, or that, yeah, so in that case, then, yeah, you're going to have people who are going to want to say, look, I need to either redo my character or we need to keep rolling with this as is.
Well, and that's the easy part for me is the if someone wants to redo their character because something's been wrong rules wise all along, I am 100% for that. Yeah, go ahead. We were wrong about this. It didn't work like you thought. I, as a player, I would want that from my GM. If something had been consistently wrong, I would want the chance to recreate the
character. You have to be like that. Every other example I can think of this, it's been like that. You say, okay, we've messed this portion up. Let's redo the character and make it reflect how the world is going to work. It would be unbelievably unfair if you went to somebody, yeah, this whole thing that you built your character on, it doesn't work like that, but tough. You're dealing with it.
Well, I would be tempted in a long form campaign, as I realize, I pull the player aside and say, okay, we've been doing this wrong all this time, but it's been working. You want to just house rule it and make it work like this for this campaign. If we do a future campaign, we'll get it right. But it hasn't broken the game. If it's affecting the game, it's one thing. But if the game seems to be going on, but you're screwing the rule up, what's wrong with that? That's a new house rule.
I think that's fair, too. I mean, it's got to be a consensus between the GM and the player.
Right. I don't want to sound all hippy-dippy, but does it affect the narrative?
Hippy.
But the mechanics as written, whether they were interpreted correctly or not, does this combat and the error that you made in combat change the narrative of the campaign, the character development, the story arc, any of that?
Yeah, and looking at the mistakes I've made over the couple of years I've been GMing, some of them I can point to and say, yes, it would.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, no.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you're gaming with your friends and your wife. I mean, they're going to accept, look, yeah, mea culpa, I screwed up.
The person that's going to be hardest on me for screwing up a rule is me.
Yeah, and that's my experience. Most rules or setting screw-ups are typically so small that I'd be like, whoops, you can't do that, and whatever, we'll just fix it from now on. But it's not radically going to alter the direction of the game. You know what's funny is I've actually created this on my own without realizing I was doing it, because when I run Battletech, there are certain house rules that I use that I found, I think, give the game a little bit better feel. And then my players go forth and play in con tournaments or something and don't realize that those were my house rules and think that's how the game is standardly played.
Whoops.
Well, yeah. And that's one thing, too. If you have somebody who plays in multiple groups that are playing the same gaming system,
oh, yeah,
that could get confusing, especially, let's say you're doing a Pathfinder game and you have somebody playing in Pathfinder Society as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been working this way all this time because if you actually follow the rules, it's ridiculously painful to get to have it figure out. Like, I don't want to count my arrows.
Right. Right.
But you go somewhere like Pathfinder Society, you're counting your arrows.
Ah, man, it's like a John Woo movie. Whatever. I just don't care. I mean, exactly. There's so many things in the game mechanically that I just don't care about. I just want to play the game and have fun.
I don't care about encumbrance rules. I will never care about them. But you go to another group, they might care about them. I'm just going to throw them out in any game I'm playing in.
Yeah,
with the exception of something like Battletech, where it is a balancing mechanism.
As long as you don't have like an elephant that you've picked up and be like, I'm going to carry him on my back.
Yeah, that was the problem I had was I've never been into encumbrance rules either. Now, I realize in some games, especially, let's say you're doing a long-haul dungeon crawl. That's what your group likes to do. Totally fine. You're doing the Temple of Elemental Evil, top to bottom. How much you can carry matters, because you might have to decide, I'm going to drop this to carry this because that's the risk I'm willing to take in terms of my survival. But yeah, where I ran into it and I had to put the kibosh on it was in a Battletech game when I had a player who just kept pulling out one thing after another after another after another, and finally I'm like, can I see your character sheet? He had 10 rifles. He had a battle mech repair kit, which is not like a tool belt. It was the version that's like a half ton or quarter ton. Like, you ever been like in an auto mechanic shop? Yep. And they have like one of those big push carts that has all the tools and then all this. It's like that. He's got that on his person. There are these grenades they had in there that were actually almost to the level of satchel charges. These were not like pineapple grenades. Right. These were big suckers. He had about a dozen of those. I mean, it just went on and on. I'm like, where the hell are you putting all of this?
I'm picturing this guy pushing his cart.
You know, I don't know about everyone else, but I, for one, love some of Dan's Battletech stories. My favorite one, and you probably haven't heard of Brodor, and I don't know if you have, Beth, was, I think you said it was Tex that did this, where he figured out the math to where he could have a smaller mech inside the bigger one.
Yes, there is a rule that exists within Battletech.
Like a Russian doll?
Yes. There is a rule in Battletech that exists to this day, which I am proud to say Tex and I are responsible for. And you can still find this, I believe, in some of the source books. I don't know about the newest ones, but at least as new as the ones I have. You could still find it in there, and Tex and I are responsible for it. But I'll give credit where it's due. This was originally Tex's idea. I helped him flesh it out. What he figured out was that mechs are allowed to carry cargo, and there are certain rules for how you can do it. And you can actually, even though they don't have any book standard, or at least didn't as far as I knew the game up through 3053, you can actually make battle mechs as small as 10 tons, even though what you find in the book is only as small as 20 tons. And so what he worked out was he was able to create a 100-ton mech that had a 10-ton escape mech inside of it. And so the idea was that basically if one mech, your main mech's getting destroyed, this little one on the inside, and I don't, it had like no armor, but it was just ridiculously fast. And I think it had like one medium laser on it. But he basically said, hey, you know, you can just, instead of ejecting out of the mech, you basically eject into a different cockpit. The mech bursts apart or
like
whatever.
Alien.
Yeah, or something. And this little mech shoots out of it. And there was nothing in the rules to stop this from working.
That is a beautiful
and
thing.
So it got, I don't remember if it actually made it into the issue or not, but it was sent to the official fan magazine and either was published or at least got put under review, at which point the guys all the way up at FASA, this was before FASA shut down AWOL, they changed the rules of Battletech to specifically say you cannot put another mech in the cargo bay.
That is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that is so awesome, though. I want that mech.
I do, too.
Seeing as I have a character who was kicked... You know,
in the head.
Was kicked in the head and killed within his mech. How cool would it have been if I had that? I just pop right out and I'm going.
Or I have a hover tank.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? You know, I mean, there's a lot of things they refer to in the game.
Ooh, or, some of those hover tanks are as powerful as a mech,
Do you
too.
Know what I'm picturing now? Do you remember in Spaceballs the scene where the alien pops out and they're like, hello, my honey.
Hello, my ragtime gal.
Yes, this is what I'm picturing.
You know, and there's a lot of things that are in the fluff text that imply things like this. For example, they talk about how the Cyclops, for anyone who's not familiar with Battletech, this is a very large command mech. They talk about how it has a C3 trailer on its back that you can actually lower a mobile command center off of its back and use that to coordinate the battle. Now, there's no specific rules for this. But if you read the fluff description of it, at least in the 3025 tech readout, it very specifically says it's on there. It has a double-wide trailer on its back you can drop on the ground, and it's got a communications array and whatever else, and you can run your Battlefield C3 right out of this thing, then the Cyclops can go and pick it up. So, I mean, if that's there, then why not an ejection mech?
Right.
If you've got a double wide on the back of your mech, then you have got to be wearing some sort of boots and a cowboy hat because you've got a double wide trailer.
Now we need to write to Catalyst and ask them about the rules for prefab mechs. I want the armor to be corrugated.
Your mortal enemy is a tornado.
It's a tornado. That would be awesome if they designed a mech specifically to kill that mech and called it the tornado. Just like they already have the wolf trap, which was designed to kill the wolf hound.
Yes, make this happen. So we've learned that rules are bad.
Well, I mean, and that's a whole nother episode. And I think probably...
What, the rules are bad?
No, well, then how much do the rules matter?
I'm channeling Chad.
And I see, I like Chad's philosophy a lot. I'm somewhere between Dan and Chad, or I guess John and Chad, because I like rules to a point, but at some point I would give up the rules for the narrative, if that makes sense.
John's actually rules heavier than I am.
Okay.
No, John's the type of guy where if you open a treasure chest and it's trapped and you die, you die.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he's rules heavier than I am.
Gotcha. But I'm sorry, my point was the episode recently where you and Chad, I remember specifically, were talking about religion and how characters adopt their religion and how the player
sure.
presents that in game, I thought was really, really great. An episode I've recommended to a number of people to listen to. But for me, it really does come down to, do the rules matter? I mean, the guy with the encumbrance, obviously he's taking advantage of you. But at the end of the day, if I fire a 21st missile out of my quiver of 20, I mean, does anybody honestly right. give a shit?
Not unless it's critical to the game. I mean, if this is like post-nuke survival, then yes. Because
right.
those may be the only 20 arrows you ever see in your life.
Right. But
that's now critical to the game.
Right. And that's what it comes down to versus, I mean, like in my Star Wars game upcoming, I don't care if you've got the power cells sure. for your blaster.
It's just the old joke of, do you make people roll to take a dump?
Yeah.
Do you roll with intelligence to see if they remember to eat?
Only if you're playing Fatal.
Okay. So, thank you, Wayne. check the show notes for everything but that.
No kidding.
But as for...
You can't did this one to Tsunami.
Oh!
No, I had more to say, but no.
It's terrible. Like, I just...
Now we're mic dropping.
In my mind.
Yeah, mic dropping an episode.
I just have the convention center and all these bodies floating.
Oh my God, you're wrong.
That's the shirt I want from the con. It's just all the flotsam and corpses.
These poor people.
Are all the corpses waving?
Nice. Very nice.
These poor people.
Oh, wow.
Dan, I'm sorry I messed up the flow of your show.
I have a dark mind, and like, so that's where it goes.
I'm sure that it is a beautiful, lovely con in the beautiful downtown Wichita, Kansas, where there is no water.
Thank you for tuning in. If you're Japanese or from Southeast Asia, doubly thank you for tuning in.
We're sorry.
We're so sorry. We'll catch you next time. This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2014. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.